Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So this is sort of another Modern Mystic response video, but I don't need to play any of his exact quotes because he isn't that specific about saying anything beyond some general statement that banks make money and somehow it's okay and something, whatever. Borrowing is good. Which... No, it has a consequence, and it all has to be accounted for somewhere in the end. And so I'll try to explain things, the gold standard and all that kind of stuff. I'll try to explain it all in some sort of, you know, model, a story, you know, three bears kind of thing, convert it into a different story. So let's just say you had an island. Let's just make the island a square. Okay. And you all landed on the island. Maybe it's time for a new marker. Anyway, and so you divide up there's four of you, and you divide up the island into four pieces. And let's just say this one does corn, this one has wheat, and this one has fruit. Okay. And this one also has something, peanuts, whatever. And let's just say that these commodities are equally productive in the sense that you can eat this stuff, it's all good stuff, blah, 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 blah. And so let's just say that one of these landowners decides, I'm going to get into something other than the peanut business. All right. So the catch is that your crops, you know, you want to do exchanges with each other. You know, the wheat guy wants to eat some corn now and then, and they both want the fruit and... You know, so you want to do exchanges, but you can't really practically exchange because everything's seasonal and, you know, blah, 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 and you can't carry it in your pocket, so you can't make deals. And so it would be easier to make deals if you just had this stuff, some other commodity like gold, that you could just carry around with you and make exchanges because it was worth the same thing. So you have commodities or just these stuff, and they all have a price, right? They all have a value. And so the peanuts, you know, and so they're in a little market and they all have a cash equivalency. You know, they're all relative to each other. You could say they're worth something, and the something they're worth is this common thing called a dollar. But if you didn't have dollars, then it would be salt, like a pound of salt. Like if you wanted to get a pound of salt, you could, you know, give somebody 10 pounds of fruit and they give you a pound of salt, you know, this kind of thing. So there's a relationship between the value of these things. And so all that's really changing here in this story I'm going to tell is that when this guy decides, I don't really care about peanut farming, but my farm is worth money. And so what I'm basically going to do is convert ownership of my land into something called a dollar. And I'll say my land is worth 1,000 of these dollars, right? So the whole property is worth 1,000. So 1,000th of the property would be $1. So one little section... That's, you know, 1,000th of the property is now a piece of paper that says you own it. So you can buy from me pieces of the property. And yeah, it has real value. You know, it's a real commodity. And so now this guy's basically become a banker. And now he can tell these other people can sell pieces of their property to buy this cash he's invented, the paper. That says you own this piece of property. So they can trade a piece of their property going to the bank. They go to the guy called banker, all right, and they give in something of value, a piece of their property, so a piece of W. And what they'll get out is a piece of paper, okay, that says they own a piece of peanut farm. So they're just exchanging value. But now they have this piece of paper that now they can make deals. Okay, and you know, now we're going to get more complicated. We're going to have horses, and we're going to have blacksmiths, and we're going to have all kinds of different stuff that's going to go on. And we're all going to use this stuff because it's really convenient. And it's basically just a commodity now on this market. Okay, and so what controls the value of the stuff on the market, generally speaking, is how much of it there is and how desirable it is, how much people want it. So, you know, if they make a lot of fruit, and then the fruit loses value because people get sick of eating fruit. Now, there's a lot of corn, and corn loses value, goes down relative to wheat because there's less wheat and there's more corn, so wheat becomes more valuable. So they all fluctuate, but the general idea is this is tied to all of them as an average. And so this maintains its value relative to all these commodities. Now, when we had a gold standard, all that really meant was, it didn't mean that a dollar equaled an ounce of gold. What it meant was, is that for every dollar the government produced, instead of giving away property, it gave away gold, okay, an amount of gold. So whatever the value of gold was the value of peanut farm in this analogy. And the idea was, is the bank could only give out money if it collected money. I mean, it had to collect the gold before it could give out any money. So in a sense, whenever the government did any work, it would have to basically pay out twice, because it would have to buy the gold to put into the vault and then produce the value out to the person. So there, you know, it's two outlays. They had to buy the cash by giving up something to get the gold. They had to give away money to get the gold, and then they're giving away money after they put the gold in the vault, so they're paying twice as much. So it's a little bit inefficient. You would understand loaning money wouldn't be something that worked very well for the government, because it's, you know, not gaining anything out of the... It's not very productive to put money in a vault, would be the argument, just as it's not very productive not to use the peanut farm while it's mortgaged. It should still farm, so to speak. It should maintain its value. All right, so the gold standard didn't mean much. It was just a weight placed on the idea of lending money. It just made money more expensive. Like, the bank can't lend money if it has to own a piece of property before it can give out a certificate for a piece of property. It has to go out and buy one. Like, if I can't give out this dollar until I actually buy a piece of a corn farm and put it on my farm, or say I own that, before I can put out the dollar, you can just understand, well, that's not gonna work. That's worse than full reserve banking. Well, it technically is full reserve banking. And it means interest rates go way up because loans are expensive. It costs money to loan money, and so it's not very productive. So anyway, so then they, later on we drop the reserves, and now they're dangerously low in the sense that now they don't have property. They don't really own anything, and they're putting out the money, which, is risky. Because if you don't get the money back, the value back, you lost. The cash certificate will come back, and you won't have anything to pay it back with. You won't have any property value to give back. So you have to stay above zero anyway, in terms of having some liquidity, some capacity to pay out if somebody shows up and says, here's a dollar, give me the property. All right, so you can sort of just understand, money's just a commodity, like all the other commodities, and you can make too much of it. So if the government prints extra money, okay, that means it's not printing money based on a piece of property it has. It's just printing it, making more money, and it doesn't have to pay anything for it. So it can just buy stuff, okay, and just says it owns something. And the only way it owned it is by printing money, which means there's more money in circulation, which means people will see that it's more desirable to own fruit than to own the dollar, because the dollar has been devalued by putting more of it in circulation. So the more there is of something, the less valuable it gets. The more Van Gogh paintings there are, the less you can sell the Van Gogh paintings for. Okay, the average price goes down because there's only so many people that want a Van Gogh and are willing to pay, big money for one. So anyway, all this fluctuates, but again, it fluctuates, as little individual things and as a collection of things. It doesn't fluctuate much, and the real pressure on currency isn't what commodities becoming more valuable. It's the fact that we are printing extra cash, which, takes the edge off. Now, the problem is if you don't have some inflation, that if cash doesn't degrade in value a little bit year to year, you could sort of understand that people would love to store cash because it doesn't mold, it doesn't get wet, it doesn't get flooded like property. Lots of things can happen to property to ruin its value. But if you have a commodity that there's no more of, then you have kind of a guaranteed value that it can't go down. So you want a little bit of inflation. You want the money to get a little less valuable every year, so nobody is encouraged to store cash. Because if they store the cash, just like if somebody buys up all the gold and stores it, the demand will still be the same, and the price will end up going up because there's fewer bidders bidding on fewer, you know, there's more bidders bidding on fewer things to bid on, so they'll spend more money on what they're bidding on. All right, so that's the basics of an economy, is the money is not an unreal thing. It's a commodity, it's produced in a small volume, and it essentially does represent value. So if the government has $2 trillion, it's like 2.4, I think now or something, in circulation, all it needs is $2 trillion worth of assets. So if everybody showed up with a printed dollar, a real dollar, real piece of currency, the government could pay it because, yeah, it has $2 trillion worth of nuclear submarines and all kinds of other crap. So we could definitely sell that stuff and pay, okay, the liabilities. That is, give people value for their dollar. And so if somebody wants it in wheat, the government could go buy some wheat by selling something and taking the cash and buying some wheat and then giving it to the person who showed up with the cash, right? So they could pay the bill. It's not, so it's a real commodity. Okay, the cash dollars are just a representation of what does the government have as assets to pay out. And it clearly has the assets to be able to cover the value of the actual printed cash, the actual stuff. Now the trick is that the banks are working independent of that government. And so they have their own obligation to back up what they've got in terms of a system of, you know, real value, you know, vault cash versus what they own. So what people do is they give them, you know, they cut a piece of their property off. Well, you can see the advantage of this system, right? Because somebody could basically just mortgage their whole property. They could give it to the bank, get the cash, and they could use the cash to pay somebody to build a house on their property, all right, which makes all of the little squares in their property worth more, okay? And they still own it. It's in the bank, but they still own it. And then they could sell some other little portion, okay, because now it has higher value, and they could sell those portions to buy back the other part of the property they sold. And, you know, you can see, oh, there's lots of ways for them to engineer a system where they make a profit on the deal, where they come out with added value. And so, you know, they could build a blacksmith shop, or they could build some other thing by first acquiring the cash to pay somebody to do the work. They collect a profit. They use the profit to buy their, to buy what they mortgaged out of mortgage. And they've come off quite good. And the bank makes money because it's charging some kind of interest rate, okay? So that sort of works. As long as this interest rate doesn't go crazy, you know, it's not a bad way of allowing people to capitalize, collateralize value and use it to create future value. So that's how the economy basically works, is that there's a certain amount of money. And you're really saying is what you ideally want is that money to go to people who are going to do something productive with it. Now, there's lots of people that get money to, and they do something completely unproductive. They finance some sort of silly research like, I don't know, whatever, gravitational waves. And they'll spend $5 billion anyway, something like that, do something that has no practical value, won't feed anybody. It's just complete nonsense, rubbish, bullshit. So it's very unproductive. So you paid out a lot of money, a lot of value, and you basically just threw it into the ground and let it rot. You know, so you want to get the most you can out of this circulation of cash. You want people to climb telephone poles and fix internet infrastructure, and you want them to build power plants, and you want them, there's stuff that has real productive effect, you know, filling in potholes, you know, all that kind of stuff. Engineering a better car, engineering something, you know, that's all good stuff. That's the kind of stuff you want the cash to be paying, and you want to avoid paperwork and lawyers and courts and all the other rubbish that just drains money out of the system, pays people to do shit work. You know, work that you can't walk on, work you can't eat, work that won't, you know, environmentally safely decompose your poo. I mean, there's lots of jobs and work that needs to be done to make our lives civilized. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that's uncivilized in the sense that it's just really wasteful. It's like, you know, paying a cop $150,000 to write a ticket for $20. Kind of bullshit, you know. You're paying the guy $300 an hour, and you're getting back $20 an hour. Really unproductive. So anyway, so that's what it all just is, okay? And so the banks are doing the same thing. They're just lending out these dollars. And yes, they don't have to have, for every dollar they lend out, they don't have to have a dollar in their bank, okay? They don't have to have the cash. So that's what it means by reserve banking. So, you know, it was 5%. I think it's like 2.5% now, which is really kind of silly, okay, in terms of being way too low. But anyway, the idea is they can still function because they don't have anybody asking, you know, nobody's showing up with a check to cash that's bigger than they can cash. They do have the cash in the vault to pay the liability. They have the hard asset. And the other thing they have, though, that has to be understood is they took in value when they made the loan. So the idea is they take in a house worth 100, okay, and they give out 80 or 70 even. They give out much less than what they take in. So they took in an asset, they took in a piece of property, ownership of something that has real value, collateral. So as long as all these loans are collateralized, you don't need reserves, right? This reserve number could literally be zero as long as the assets the bank takes in before it gives away the money are solid and they're guaranteed that if the guy don't pay the money, they own the asset and they can actually sell it on the market and get the $100,000 that it's worth. Now, if they can't do that, okay, that's when the mortgage crisis, for example, where the bank took in a bunch of properties valued at $100,000. They gave $80,000, but they could only resell the house for $50,000. So they were really out of luck, okay, because they're not going to get the money back. The guy isn't going to pay the loan. They're stuck with just the property value, okay? Yes, they only paid out $80,000 and they got $100,000, but it doesn't matter because they're only going to get $50,000 back. So they're going to lose $30,000 on that loan. So that was the big crisis in 2011, is there was trillions of dollars of this. You know, bad loans where the collateral they took in dropped dramatically, 50% in value, and now the banks were all insolvent because nobody wanted to pay. I mean, people weren't going to pay a mortgage on a $100,000 house that's only worth 50. I mean, it's already like you're paying twice as much anyway. They're going to end up paying with interest $200,000. So why would they pay $200,000 to own a $50,000 house? So their economics says I'd rather go bankrupt than, you know, lose 3/4 of my money. So, you know, that's why there was a banking crisis, and they fixed the banking crisis by doing two. Well, I didn't really get to the Federal Reserve. So all these banks all are using digital cash. You know, it's just an accounting thing. They have counted on the board. They say that I have a deed. And the deed is just represented by a number, blah, 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 blah. And so to regulate them so they can't be frauds, that is where they can't, you know, have, they can't be bankrupt, they all are connected to the Federal Reserve. And what the Federal Reserve does is it just does all the cash checking. So if this bank writes a check and this bank cashes it, then this bank can tell the Federal Reserve, I want you to take money out of their account and give it to me because I cashed that bank's check. And so the Federal Reserve just does all the check balancing. And so there's an account for each bank in the Federal Reserve. And that decides the money, and that's how they put money in. The government spends money into circulation by basically telling the banks to go buy something. And so that's what they've done, is they've taken these accounts, okay, and told this bank to write a $7 trillion check, let's say. All right. But, and then it came into this bank, $7 trillion, and the Federal Reserve said, well, we'll just put the $7 trillion in your account, but it's not real money, okay? Just never, we're never going to cash that check, basically. And we're just going to keep the money in the account, and we won't worry about it, okay? Because you don't need it. It's dead money. It's not still in circulation. The check's stuck here. It's not out somewhere doing anything. So as long as we keep it in here, okay, nobody will know about it. But the problem is if this bank goes bankrupt, it's going to need that $7 trillion. Obviously, one bank couldn't write the $7 trillion, so a lot of banks spread that out. And so they all have a piece of that Federal Reserve liability on their books, but it's all like, oh yeah, the government will pay it when time comes. So if the bank goes bankrupt and it needs the money, then the Fed has to give it the real cash to pay the bill to that it made it buy off the market, because it wanted the cash, right? That's what it basically did. All right, and it put the cash back into the market. It basically put more commodities, bonds, cash. It bought a bond from somebody. You can understand, if somebody owns the bond, they give the guy who owns the bond the fake check. Okay, he cashes it at a bank and gets real cash out. And then he goes and buys shit on the stock market, making the stock market go up. So we're creating buyers. So the federal government now has $8 trillion of fake money in the Fed that'll never go anywhere until we're bankrupt, until the crisis, and then it'll print cash and inflation will go sky high. But it's not spendable money. So it's $8 trillion of dead money, and it was only for one purpose, to inflate the stock market. So the whole boom in the stock market, even though the economy in all other respects looks like it's dead, the stock market keeps going up, so people keep getting richer, all right, even though there's no reason for it, and there's no reason for it because it's all this fake money. All right, so that's $8 trillion worth of fake borrowing. So it's not even like they made a real bond, you know, where they said, I'm mortgaging, you know, I'll give you ownership and you give me cash. So that's what a bond is. A bond is just another form of cash, right, that you give somebody. You give them a piece of paper that says you own. It's another selling of your property. So there's $8 trillion there. Now, the other thing they did was is they federally insured deposit accounts, you know, to give make people comfortable to keep their money in banks. So they said, well, we'll have this federal insurance. Well, what they did was is when the stock market crashed, a bunch of rich people were going to get poor really quick because they owned a bunch of these mortgages that aren't worth anything. And the only way they could fix it is the government had to basically guarantee the stocks that were based on the bad mortgages. So there were stocks on the stock market that were based on the bad mortgages. And what the government did was said, okay, we'll guarantee the price. So if they're worth $200 today, okay, that's what they stay. They stay at $200. Okay, you can't lose money. So even if it's found out that it's only worth $2, okay, you'll get the $200. So no matter what it goes, no matter how much it falls in value, it's still worth $200. The government will give you your $200. So they guaranteed these pieces of garbage, these junk bonds, and give, you know, just so they would stay on the market and people wouldn't have to go bankrupt. They wouldn't own stuff that was worthless. So that was another $8 trillion or so, 7 or 8 trillion, who knows the exact numbers. And where did they get that money from? Well, they got it from the federal FDIC insurance. So they essentially FDIC insured all the junk bonds. Well, now that means that when you're FDIC insured in this bank, it doesn't mean anything because the government doesn't have any assets. It has $100 billion in the insurance fund covering $8 trillion in liabilities. So obviously, it's not going to go very far. And $8 trillion is just the bad debt stuff. There's all the trillions of deposits. So there could be another $10 trillion in deposits. You know, and so there's no chance that when the run of the bank happens, this insurance can't pay it. $100 billion is going to disappear so fast. And obviously, they'd have to start printing cash, or they'd have to give you a piece of paper that says, I'll pay you in 6 months. Because they're certainly not going to be immediately capable of producing the money. And just understand, they only take in $2 trillion a year when the economy's working. When the economy's broken, they're going to be taking in 0.5. They're not going to be collecting any taxes And they're going to have all these liabilities to produce cash. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's Germany 25. I mean, it's a disaster waiting to blow up. And it's all because of this stuff has real value. This is a real commodity, and it has to be protected. And now the government has some $40 trillion worth of debt, okay, that it has out there, promises of ownership, and it doesn't have any possibility of producing that $40 trillion if it's asked for. If all the people holding those pieces of paper that say you own, the government can't produce $40 trillion worth of cash. It doesn't have $40 trillion worth of assets to sell. $40 trillion represents, I think, all the homes on the east side of the Mississippi. You know, something like that. Every house, the value, if you add up all the values of all the houses east of the Mississippi, you get $40 trillion, something like that. It's a preposterous amount of value. All right, there's just no way the government could ever produce it. And there's obviously, if it charged selling stuff, you know, there's only about six people that have any money to buy a nuclear submarine. They'd have to start selling this stuff for, like, you know, okay, $250. And, you know, they'd have to go with bargain prices because there'd be absolutely no buyers. It's, you know, this is one of the crookeries of the rich, you know, is that, you know, there's rich people estates that are worth, like, $50 million. I mean, if you really add it up, what the property contains is $50 million. But they can only sell it for two, because there's only so many people. There's only 1% of the population, you know, that can come up with $2 million to buy a property. You know, it's this tiny percentage. So once you build a certain number of $2 million properties, there's not enough people who can buy them anymore at their real price, so the price goes way down. There's only so many, you know, $50 million is a lot of money. There's only, you know, whatever, few thousand people that can afford that, and so there's no buyers. So you can't sell it for that price. You have to sell it for this nothing price. That's all part of the rackets and part of the inefficiency of this cruddy system. All right, so that's probably enough. I mean, it's pretty crowded. I even drew in places you can't see, which is really cool. Right. Yeah, there was a lot down there. Well, anyway, I did explain these are banks. Yeah, these were the bank circles. And this was the other stuff that I did, and blah, 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 blah. Sorry about that. I really have to pay attention to what you're seeing. So, my bad. But anyway, that's the simple. I mean, you can only make it so simple, right? But it's just really value exchanges. Cash is an excellent way. You know, it's an excellent commodity. It isn't heavy. It isn't all these things. It's light, easy to carry, durable. It has protections against counterfeiting and all this kind of stuff. So it has real value as a commodity to relate everything else to. So it makes perfectly good sense as long as you don't start printing it. If you just print it and buy, then that cash will have no value, because everybody will know you're just printing it. It doesn't mean anything. You really can't cash it in. You won't be able to cash it in. But you can have a lot of confidence in cash just because the government has been relatively responsible in not producing too much of it. They produced enough to create some inflationary periods, but I mean, obviously inflation hasn't gone a dollar is still within a few multiples of its original value, unlike the yen, you know, which is like a million times devalued. So obviously our currency has stayed rather stable relative to the price of a commodity. You know, you could say it went from being 20 cents to the dollar, you know, like a 20 cents of wheat would buy a dollar's worth in the past, and now it's a dollar for a dollar, you know, kind of thing. So it's like five times more expensive. But it's only five times. It's not terrible, terrible. It's more than it should be. Like I said, all you want is 1 or 2% inflation per year. You want just enough extra cash so people won't hoard cash. You want just enough so they don't stick it under a mattress and inflate its value. All right, anyway, in the opposite direction. Make it irrelevant to the other commodities, where it no longer represents actual value. All right. You just don't want it to be a currency that can be inflated by, you know, like in the old days with the gold, you know, people would hoard the gold, inflate the price, sell it on the market, and just make monies off the suckers. It's kind of an insider trading kind of thing. Anyway. All right, so, yeah, another effort at trying to make it understood that the Fed doesn't print money, it prints debt, okay, and that's all it has printed. The debt is still in the Fed. The money didn't get circulated. It's still in the vault. The counterfeit money, that is the uncashed checks, are still in the vault. All right, they're not in circulation. They're not printed money yet. And the FDIC insurance is another racket. Okay, it can't work. If it's ever needed, it's useless. It's a bucket with 7 million holes in it. It won't hold any water when there's a fire. But it's a way of keeping the game playable. But what's the next trick? I mean, these are just gimmicks, you know, to sustain a system that isn't sustainable because it's got way too much overvalued, fake valued assets in it. All right. Till the next time and such. So forth and whatnot. I think it's wrong enough. It's all bubble. Bubble pricing. Fake maintenance of a price stability. And they faked it with a bunch of debt that can't be worth anything. I mean, see, when they issue a bond, what the person does who buys the bond, it's usually a banker, he just puts it in the bank for collateral and gets cash out of the bank. Doesn't cost him anything because he gets his money right back again. He pays the money for the bond, then he puts the bond in the bank, and he gets back his original money. And so he has his money, and he owns the bond, technically. Yes, he has the responsibility to pay it back, but, yeah, he can always not do that. Okay, and that's what would happen in the crisis. In the crisis, all the people who own crap are going to just walk away with their cash, and they're not going to buy their crap out of the bank, and the banks are going to be insanely bankrupt. They're not going to be a little bankrupt. They're going to be insanely bankrupt because they're going to own $40 trillion worth of shit. Absolute crap. All right. So, till the next time and such. Yeah, I really think that's enough. It's a subject you can go over and over from lots of angles. I just want to explain why I'm telling you cash is a real thing. The digits in the bank are claims on cash because cash is a real thing and it has real value. There are also claims on wheat and there are claims on flour and there are claims on all the other commodities just as well. I mean, if you really wanted the bank could, instead of giving you cash, it could give you a bucket of peaches. All right, but it would be a little bit of trouble and inconvenience, and so they'll probably tax you, you know, pay, you have to pay for that, like 10% or 20%. Well, you have to pay a fee to get it in peaches. You know, probably a lot higher than that, actually, but you get my point. You want the cash because the cash is transferable. A bucket of peaches is not durable and not very transferable, and so you really don't want your money back in a bucket of peaches. Anyway, now I'm going. All right, so this has been a donotgod.com video presentation. Thanks for your attention.